Order. And we will start with a work session on Senate Bill 704A. And as soon as Kat comes back, she will give us an overview. You should have the dash four amendments in front of you, committee members. Kat, if you can just give us a reminder of the bill and what the amendments do.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 704A, as drafted, required dentists in certain counties to have an amalgam separator installed in a wastewater drain if materials containing mercury pass through the drain. You have in front of you Amendment A4, and that guts and stuffs the original bill. That amendment requires dentists to use dental materials containing mercury to implement and maintain best management practices of dental waste as developed by the Oregon Dental Association and to have an amalgam separator installed in a wastewater drain if materials containing mercury pass through the drain. It exempts, until January 1, 2011, dentists certified by a special district that manages wastewater as following ODA guidelines for best management of dental waste. Requires that amalgam separators be verified by the manufacturer to remove at least 95% of amalgam passing through the drain, and it prohibits incineration of captured amalgam. It requires each dental office to keep proof of the amalgam separator installation and to keep a maintenance log for the most recent 3 years available for inspection by the Oregon Board of Dentistry. So the amendment applies to all dentists statewide, and it eliminates civil penalties that were in the original bill.
Okay, and just for clarification, and I would like to ask Michael Mason to come up. He's a proponent of the bill. And Michael, can you also clarify on the implementation effective date? There's a lot of discussion. If many members recall, I think Representative Jensen was out doing field research that day at the dentist, if I recall right.
Participant observation.
But we had a lot of discussion about the implementation date, so if you could discuss that, be helpful.
Well, thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the House Energy and Environment Committee. For the record, my name is Michael Mason. I represent the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. And we have had some very productive work, collaborative work, on these dash four or mystery amendments, as they were referred to at the hearing. And there was, you know, a lot of discussion because there was a longer implementation date in the bill, or in the 704A. So what this now says is that you would either, a dentist would acquire and install a mercury amalgam or a dental amalgam separator by the end of the year, by the end of 07, and in that case get the DEQ pollution control tax credit, or follow the Oregon Dental Association best management practices, which call for a recovery of about 80% of mercury from drains and traps. And then, good to see you again.
And just ask the dentist to come up as well.
And then, in any event, you go to what I understand is phase two of the ODA best management practices. By the end of 2010, all dentists in the state would have a dental amalgam mercury separator. So that's certainly acceptable to the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. I mean, we think this will do so much to reduce the mercury going directly into the wastewater plants and then into waterways, and particularly in the large metro areas on the Columbia and Willamette systems. Happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. And I'd also ask the Dental Association folks who were here last week, and for the record, if you can state your name, and I have your email, Nikki, from Friday, so maybe you can talk a little bit about the dash fours.
For record, my name is Brett Hamilton from the Oregon Dental Association.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder. For the record, my name is Nikki Terziev, also on behalf of the Oregon Dental Association.
And have you had a chance to look at the dash fours?
Yes.
Do you have any comments or...
Chair Dingfelder, my comment is that it's been really good to work in the group to get this come to this conclusion. I think it's a good bill for all. So.
And so you're supportive of the dash fours.
Yes.
Thank you. Any questions from the panel? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nikki, thanks for this email with the DMPs on here. I had a question, though. It says on here that one of the BMPs is to use disposable chair side traps. Now, that's different than what we're talking about in this bill. Is that correct?
That's correct. When I was last week when I spoke about the conjunction of the BMP program with the separators, the conjunction was with the proper disposal of the amalgam from the traps. And then the separator would collect the minute.
Okay. Amounts. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
In the A4 amendment, Section 2.1b, if I understand this correctly, what this is saying is that for Section 4 notwithstanding, that a dental facility, regardless of how old it is, will at some point have to be retrofitted to put one of these in. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Well, if I could answer that, Chair Dingfelder and Vice Chair Burley. Ultimately, that's true. By January 1st of 2011 would be the date for that.
Follow up. Thank you. That's why I said Section 4 notwithstanding, because if they, according to Section 4, if they do follow the BMPs, they don't have to do that until January 1, 2011. But if for some reason, the dentist chooses not to follow the BMPs, they have to retrofit this office regardless how old it is and how expensive that might be.
Representative Brill, that's one of the keys that, I'll say a carrot to getting our dentists into the program.
That's fine. One more follow-up, Madam Chair? Thank you. So Section 4, then, just help me understand. When it says a dentist who is certified by a special district that manages wastewater treatment, what type of a special district is that? Help me. Who's going to do that?
Well, that would be Amanda Rich, and I'm not sure that I see her here today, but it would be a district that deals with wastewater, so it doesn't have to be a municipality. My understanding.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, it says certified by a special district, so if this is a wastewater management special district, are they currently capable of certifying if a dentist is complying with the Oregon Best BMPs? You see my where I'm going with this? I mean, are these people capable of making that certification? How do we do that?
Representative Burley, I think if I understand the question correctly, where is the kind of follow-up in this? And the follow-up, I believe, in working with the different people on this bill is I understand that there is a capability of monitoring this, at least auditing if needed, if I understand your correct question.
If I may follow up, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. First of all, I really like what I see in this A4 amendment. I mean, don't misinterpret my questions as any indication that I don't like this thing. I just want to make sure we're all clear on who's doing the certification, by what protocol are they doing the certification, are they agreeable to doing the certification, is there going to be an impact fiscally to a wastewater management, whether it's the City of Bend or someone else, what do they have to do to comply with Section 4?
Apologize for being late. Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Burley.
For the record, your name, please.
For the record, my name is Margie Hoffman. I'm a lobbyist for the Oregon Dental Association. Thank you for hearing this bill today. They are already, local jurisdictions, be it the Water District or the city, are already doing this to verify compliance with the best management practices. So there won't be any surprise fiscal attached to this because the work is already being done. This bill is a continuation of, you know, outreach and broadening the best management practices, but won't require any additional staff or resources for the local jurisdiction.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you. Appreciate it. I was going to I was going to ask if this is already being done since you're already implementing the BMPs.
So yeah, and we've been, you know, we've been working on developing the best management practices for the last 6 years. It's something that is a nationally recognized program and model, and so we're really excited that the Oregon legislature is considering codifying the best management practices and recognizing the effort that the Oregon Dental Association has done to make sure that we're maintaining good stewardship of our natural resources.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Then I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 704.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 704. Any discussion?
Madam Chair,
Early?
I just want to thank everybody for working on this. I think this dash 504 amendment is a very, very good solution. I appreciate you bringing that forward.
And I'd like to share that sentiment. I think this is much clearer than the version that came over from the Senate, so I appreciate that. Any other comments? Okay. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Excused.
Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. The motion carries and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 704A as amended by the dash 4A4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
You. Representative Cannon moves Senate Bill 704A as amended with the dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you. Just, it still gives me some heartburn, I suppose, to see that the implementation date on these will not be until 2011. I think that's better than 2013, where it stood when it came over from the Senate. And granted, those people who qualify for that have to follow these best management practices. I think we should be acting to get this out of our wastewater just as quickly as possible. I will support this, given the work that's gone into it and the consensus process that we have, but the sooner the better.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. And I, Representative Burwell.
And I appreciate Representative Cannon's comments. One of the things that particularly appeals to me about the A4 amendment is the fact that it broke out the new construction on these facilities. I think that's a really reasonable thing to do is, you know, when we're constructing a new facility, now's the time to design, get it in there. So it's a very good amendment. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And just a follow-up to your comments, Representative Cannon, certainly with the BMP implementation that the Dental Association is moving forward with, hopefully we will have implementation before 2011, but obviously that sets sort of a deadline that will help facilitate the timely implementation of the BMP. So I share your sentiment, but hopefully we'll be able to get that implemented in a more timely manner. Any other comments? Okay, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson? Excused. Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. Motion carries, and Senate Bill 704A, as amended with the dash fours, will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I was going to ask Representative Smith if you would like to carry this, because I don't think you've had a chance to carry it.
Sure,
yet.
I'd like to.
Got your name on it, your teeth all over it.
All right.
Now we will close the work session.
That's
on
a good one.
Senate Bill 704. Thank you. And we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1011. And we have a description from CAT first before we call up witnesses.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1011 authorizes counties and metropolitan service districts to enter into intergovernmental agreements to designate rural reserves and urban reserves not included in urban growth boundaries, specifies criteria for designating rural reserves, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay. And we have a full list of folks that would like to come up and testify. And first we will invite David Bragdon, President of the Metro Council, and Randy Tucker. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. Appreciate the chance to be here today. This bill represents the culmination of a lot of work by every possible party involved in the urban growth boundary management and growth management system in our part of the state. One thing that the members of this broad coalition have in common is a desire to improve the current system. And while we all come at it from different perspectives in terms of the experiences that we've had with the system, we do have that in common. The idea of working together to make the system work better. The defects of the current system have been proven through our experience over the last several years in the Portland region as our agency, in cooperation with the local governments, has been managing the urban growth boundary. Some of the drawbacks of the current system that we think could be approached through a process like this include the current treadmill that we're on in terms of starting from scratch every 5 years. Each time the urban growth boundary analysis is reopened, we, without having an urban reserve system, we start from scratch in terms of doing the analysis. Secondly, the criteria that we use in deciding where to expand the urban growth boundary is based entirely on agricultural factors derived from related to soil types derived from statutes and rules made in the 1970s. Yet at the same time, third point is that the agriculture profitability factors are not part of the criteria, and that while soil type is important, we've learned that there are other aspects of the agricultural industry that are not reflected in the current rules and the current systems in terms of providing for viable agricultural profitability. We've also found that we don't have a good mechanism for coordinating with our neighboring jurisdictions, whether it's Woodburn, Sandy, North Plains, the other jurisdictions that surround us. We don't have an official mechanism to coordinate our actions with theirs in terms of growth management. And then finally, as we expand the urban growth boundary, we've found there to be a disconnection between our decisions on land use and our ability to plan and fund for infrastructure in the areas that are coming into the boundary. And as a result, development has lagged in those areas, the local governments and the development industry not being able to fund the development in those areas. And we think that urban reserves are a tool that would enable better fiscal planning and to enable local jurisdictions and the industry to connect land use planning more with capital planning as well. With the experience of these drawbacks in the current system, we've worked very hard over the last 2 or 3 years to develop this legislation. And what we have in front of you, and I think you'll hear from, is a really truly unprecedented coalition in terms of land use issues, to have groups as diverse who will be coming before you today to testify in favor of this, ranging from the development industry, home builders, realtors, contractors, all the major mainstream business groups, agricultural groups, the winemakers, the nurseries, and understanding from their standpoint the stability that this could bring to their industry, and then also notably the local governments in our region. We have 25 different cities in our jurisdictional boundary. They don't necessarily have a lot in common on a lot of things, yet this is one thing that was unanimously adopted by our policy advisory committee of local governments, as well as I believe some of the surrounding jurisdictions not in our boundary, such as Sandy. So to have something unanimously adopted as being supported by the local governments in our region is really a very significant thing. So we hope that you will honor this coalition that has come before you today, and we hope to not have it the hard work and detailed work that's gone into this over the past 2 years be jeopardized by any changes at this point. That coalition is going to be very important going forward, because really this bill, it only enables us to have the difficult discussions. It directs the commission, the Land Conservation and Development Commission, to enter into rulemaking, and obviously keeping a good dialogue among all these affected parties would be important during that rulemaking, as well as during our council's deliberations about actually implementing it. And so we would like to move forward with the spirit that we've developed over the last several years of working with all of those parties. That doesn't end the controversy. Urban growth boundary management is always going to be controversial, and it ought to be, and that's what democracy is about. It's about resolving difficult questions. But this does give us the tools to at least have controversy about the things that really matter, and the best information in front of us and the best tools as we make those decisions. So we appreciate your support for this, and I'd be happy to respond to questions. I'd also ask if we could yield the floor to Mr. Tucker in case I've forgotten anything or anything that he'd like to correct or amplify.
Would you like to clean up for your boss there?
I'll step outside.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll do the corrections privately later. No, actually, that was all exactly what I would have said if I had the ability to say it. What I would like to do is walk you through your packet here, tell you what you've got, tell you what this bill specifically does, and I'm prepared to answer questions that go into some level of detail. We've got plenty of other people that can do that, but only the level of detail that you would like. So let me just tell you what we've got here. First of all, if you look at the left side of your packet, the first sheet is the basic argument for the bill. On the back of that sheet at the top, what does SB 1011 do? That's the simplest explanation of what this bill does, and let me just tell you quickly what it does. Three sections of this bill are the key sections. In Section 3 of the bill, there is a process established for the creation of rural reserves. These would be lands that would be off limits to urban development, in other words, to UGB expansions, for a long-term period. Section 6 of the bill establishes a new process for the creation of urban reserves. These are the first priority lands to be brought into the urban growth boundary, and we would designate lands that would be brought into the UGB beyond the current 20-year supply that's in the urban growth boundary. There's an existing process for doing that. What we're doing here is creating a new process that we believe provides more flexibility and is more doable in the region. And then finally, in Section 4, the sections aren't in order of how I want to talk about it, but that doesn't matter. In Section 4 of the bill, there's a process established by which neither the urban reserve process under this bill nor the rural reserve process can be executed. We can't actually create the urban or the rural reserves under this bill unless there's agreement between Metro and the county about both. So there's it's a collaborative process. There's safeguards in there having to do with the requirement that there be agreement about both the urban and rural reserves in a given county, and that is outlined in Section 4 of the bill. The next sheet is a bulleted summary of each section of the bill, and I've just, you can refer to that as necessary. Following that, provided just an illustration of the timeline that this bill creates. If you take a quick look at that, right now we plan for 20 years of urban of land needs, and we put that land in the urban growth boundary, and we do that every 5 years, which is what the little hash marks are below the horizontal line. What this bill would do would be allow us to plan for 20 to 30 years beyond that for both urban and rural reserves. The urban reserves would have to be 20 to 30 years of land need, would have to accommodate 20 to 30 years of land need beyond the 20-year supply in the UGB, and then the rural reserves that would be established would be protected for that same period of time. So it'll be somewhere in the dotted section of the line. So just a reference to illustrate the timelines. The next item is a bill that we've word processed, and I want to note that the bill came out of the Senate A engrossed, and the work group that has been working on this met again last week and came up with several more amendments that are in the nature of refinements, clarifications. There's no major upheaval in those amendments, but there is some language, which you'll see highlighted in this version of the bill. It has to do with appeals, there's some clarifications, et cetera, but we can walk through that if you like. I just want to move through the packet quickly if possible. And then you've seen you've seen the next couple of items in either similar or identical form before. The MPAC resolution unanimously endorsing this concept in January.
MPAC,
Metro Policy Advisory Committee, that President Bragdon mentioned.
It's the local government body.
Right. And then the spreadsheet that shows our work plan, not spreadsheet, but the flowchart that shows our work plan over the next couple of years, which is just slightly changed since you last saw it, but still in draft form. On the right side of the packet, for your reference, there are three sheets. And these have to do with a process Metro went through called the Ag-Urban Study with our partners, the three counties of the region, and DLCB, and the Department of Agriculture, where we tried to answer several questions about the region. What are the truly critical agricultural lands from the perspective not so much of soil type, but of their importance to the agricultural economy functionally? What are the key areas that need to be protected in the region from the standpoint of ecological functions? And what are the most important lands for urban development? And what are the characteristics that those lands would have? And so out of that process, this bill has emerged. And these three sheets address those three questions. These are sort of summaries of a whole lot of work and much bigger documents that try to answer those questions. We've tried to reflect in the bill some of the results of that work, and you know, at your leisure, you might want to glance through that. There are just two more things I'd like to mention, and before I step aside or answer your questions, one is that this group that's been working together—it's been a very good process, and we met again last week. And one thing that we've agreed is we'd like to submit a document to you that people are still reviewing that would outline sort of a legislative, for the purpose of legislative history, outline sort of the understandings and agreements about what this bill means and what it's going to really accomplish. And so we'll bring that to you on Wednesday, assuming that there's a work session on Wednesday. And finally, if you look at the back of the first sheet, the vote yes sheet, the bulleted section, there's a list of most of the groups that support this bill, just for your easy reference. It's a very broad group, as you'll see from the testimony today, and there are other groups that that have recently decided to support the bill that aren't listed here, but just, you know, a general sense of the breadth of this coalition. I'll stop there and answer any questions you may have.
Okay, I think Representative Furley had a question, and I have one.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. The more I read this, the more questions I have. I think we need to add another finding to this thing, something about, can Metro make it any more difficult? Let me just start here at the top of this thing. In Section 1, you define rural reserve to include agriculture, forestry, or important natural landscape features. Then you go to Section 3, Subsection 2, actually Subsection 3, I guess it would be,
mm-hmm.
Where this would be, colleagues, on page 2, lines 9 through 30, where it talks about when designating a rural reserve, agriculture. Now, you know, again, in the definition, we talk about agriculture, forestry, and other natural resource-related items, yet none of that's addressed in Section 3, Subsection 3. And I'm also particularly a little concerned, so please see if you can help raise my comfort level on lines 28 through 30, where LCDC shall, after consultation with, again, only the Department of Agriculture, adopt a rule or process and criteria for designating these reserves, yet we're supposed to be talking about forestry and these other things as well.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, excuse me, Representative Burley, Vice Chair Burley, if you look at look at line 4, subsection 3, and it says there, when designating a rural reserve under this section, to provide long-term protection to the agricultural industry. This set of factors here only addresses urban or rural reserves that are created for the purpose of providing protection to agriculture. And it was felt by the group that this was going to be the predominant use of the rural reserves and that it was necessary to establish some factors to be considered there, whereas it was no one had a good handle on what the factors would be in the bill for the other two purposes, and there will be rulemaking that can flesh those out. So this specifically refers to agricultural rural reserves, which, again, that's probably the main area of rural reserve activity.
Thank you. Well, sorry, Randy, but that hasn't done anything to help my comfort level, because if we're going to add language in here that sets some parameters for agriculture but do nothing for forestry or nothing for other important natural landscape features, that makes me really nervous. And I can tell you from personal experience in Bend with these areas of special interest and all these little set-asides we have for lava rock outcrops and things that have all led to Measure 37 claims, that's why I'm a little concerned about the way this is worded right now. We've got all this stuff that addresses agriculture, and yet none of these other uses that ostensibly could be one of the reasons why we set up a rural reserve.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, others might want to address this as well, but the if you look at the map of the region, what adjoins the region and most of the areas where there's potential expansions is farmland. And so there's not a lot. There's forest land up in the Forest Park area, and that could also be considered the natural features type of area. But if you look around the region, it mostly consists of agricultural land.
Well, and Randy, I understand and appreciate that. So I guess my response to that would be fine. Then let's take out on line 7, page 1, forestry or important natural landscape features. Let's just leave the rural reserve for agriculture if that's what the vast majority of it is. And then we won't have any questions about these other things.
We do have somebody from Forest Park and the Department of Forestry signed up, so I think that they might have some input into that.
Okay.
Any
other questions? Moving on, I just want to make sure I understand Section 3, Subsection 1, where it says a county and a metro service district may enter into an intergovernmental agreement. So the intergovernmental agreement is between the county and metro in this case, right? So
yes, that's correct.
So the designation of rural reserves could not happen without such an intergovernmental agreement being entered into. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. And that process is outlined in Section 4 on the next page.
Right. And then lastly, and I'll reserve here because I haven't quite gotten through this, but I'll in Section 6, page 3, subsection 1, we've got A and then the new paragraph B. I'm not quite sure the distinction between these two because the old language said that local governments may cooperatively designate lands outside urban growth boundaries as urban reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we doing with paragraph B that we're adding in then? I'm not quite sure if we already have this authority. What are we doing with this new stuff?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, paragraph A, subparagraph A, refers to the existing process for establishing urban reserves, which goes through the hierarchy of lands that is in the urban reserve rule. Paragraph B establishes a new process that is based instead on the factors that you'll find on the next page, the urban factors, and that is paragraph 5 of Section 6. You'll see the bold language on the top of page 4. And so that's the difference. It's a different set of criteria that are focused on the suitability of the land for urban use.
Well, then that was supposed to be my last one. The last one was. I apologize. So then on line 15 on page 3, which is the new paragraph B, where it says that the metro and a county may enter into a written agreement, but then it goes on, these ORS citations, which I haven't looked up yet, what's the significance of those? Because if the 190.003 to 130, et cetera, that's already in the statute. So are we actually, what are we creating that's new if this is already here?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Burley, those citations, and we've got Metro's attorneys in the audience as well. He can answer as well. But I believe those citations are the ones that govern the adoption of intergovernmental agreements generally.
Okay.
We're checking on that right now. I did have a follow-up to Representative Burley's question regarding the agreement between the counties and Metro, and I'm just curious why cities weren't included. Because for some urban, for some rural reserve areas, it's going to be adjacent to a city boundary, and it wouldn't necessarily be, I mean, in the county land, but it's adjacent to a city. So was that discussed?
Yes, it was, Madam Chair. The land that would be considered would by definition not be in a city, so it would be county land. However, our responsibilities under Goal 2, I believe it is, would require us to coordinate with cities, irrespective of whether they're mentioned in the bill or not. So we did have that discussion earlier on, and some of the cities raised the question, and I believe we've answered that question to their satisfaction, but they may want to speak to that.
Okay. Yep, we do have some signed up. So any other questions for this panel? We have a lot of people signed up that would like to speak on this bill. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you
for coming in, and appreciate you answering those tough questions. And next we have up Jim McCauley and John Chandler. And actually, I'll bring up Jeff Stone as well, because we are got a lot of people that want to speak on this, so we have to start limiting testimony. Okay, thank you. Jim, you can get started, please.
Certainly. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Jim McCauley here today, representing Portland Metro Home Builder Association. We are here in support of Senate Bill 1011. It's a good bill. It's worthy of your support. It's got coalition support amongst a variety of different interest groups, as well as ours. There are some major elements of Senate Bill 1011, which is part of the reason why we are supporting it. It comes down to providing for an alternative process to our current system for UGB expansion, which has not been working, and there's been enough written and alluded to in that element. The other item is in terms of the agreement that's required between the counties and Metro. We no longer will have a single agency or a single point making that decision. That potentially will give us a better choice of lands coming in. It will give us a better balance of some of the decisions that will ultimately end up being made for the long term. And then ultimately, the actually having an urban criteria in place is a huge, very significant component of this bill, and because under the current system, we basically get urban areas after they've made their way through an entire screening process and end up really with the slivers and dust that gets spit out at the end. So this, for the first time, will actually have a urban criteria in place for us to look at expansion over the long term. Ideally, we look at this bill as also being able to pretend to resolve some of the other issues in terms of infrastructure finance and just looking at a longer time frame for urban form and how areas are going to be planned in the future. I'll be happy to take any questions or turn them over.
I think we're going to keep going, and then we'll take questions at the end.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, member of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, which is a state group. Echoing Mr. McCauley's comments from the Portland Home Builders of support for this bill, and I will be very brief. I simply want to point out for the committee's benefit that I started working on land use issues for the home builders a long time ago. And I'll call your attention to one statement in Metro's packet, which kind of summarizes, I think, why we are here and why we recommend this bill to you. Virtually no one is happy with the current system for managing the Portland region's urban growth boundary. The system we have in place now does not work. It works for lawyers. It works for consultants. It does not work for property owners, builders, the community, or anything else. I'll be very frank. We don't know that the system we're presenting to you today is going to work either. We believe it will, and we believe it can't be any worse than the mess we have right now. I don't mean to praise with faint dams, Madam Chair. I think this is a very good experiment worth trying, and we believe that if it works out the way that everybody in the work group intends and all the statements have been made as part of this process, then we'll have created a much more efficient and much more sensible and rational way of evaluating urban growth boundary needs, urban growth boundary expansions in a way that respects the needs of the agricultural community as well as that of development and economic development and those interests of the cities and counties. We recommend it to you and take questions at the end.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. We stand before you today and support this bill as an act of faith, as well as working in good faith with our partners in the home building industry and other sectors of agriculture. It acknowledges, in my view, that agricultural land is just not a default place for urbanization. Rather, it is a viable, sustained, clustered industry. I have outlined in my testimony to you that will be handed out several reasons why we support this bill. We do believe that the designation of rural reserves provides long-term production for agriculture, and it codifies agriculture operations. We do not enter into this bill lightly. We think that there's a lot of work to be done. There are larger issues in land use that are need your discussion and our discussion. But we stand before you today in support of this bill and urge you to support it at this time.
And gentlemen, I have a question for all three of you. Since we have been given some proposed amendments, have you seen the amendments? Has the work group seen the amendments? As far as
Madam Chair, would those be single line that we saw last week?
Well, they no. These are additional amendments that are being proposed, and we do not have a dash number for them. No.
It's an engrossed, it was in the Metro packet.
Oh. Yes, no, that all those elements. Thank you, sorry.
don't make it sound suspicious for a minute.
Yes. Like,
what are
the
not
this are, building.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Why, sure, those are fine. Couldn't quite hear the turnip truck.
Turn up the hearing aid. Yeah,
yes, those would be fine. They're largely cleanup, some additional clarifications. So, yeah, we're fine with those amendments.
Okay. Well, we'll have, towards the end, we'll have Randy come back up and work us through those. Okay. Any questions?
Sure.
Representative Burley.
Thank you.
Who knows, he has to be out of time this afternoon, but, you know.
Well, unlike our very good friend, Representative Girard, on the floor, I will not be brief. You know, as you were speaking, I was reading a little bit more detail on the part about Section 6 on how what these urban reserves are going to do. And, you know, it talks about development at urban densities, support healthy economy, which I'm presuming means the industrial lands, public schools, walkable, well-connected system of streets. And then I get to this part where it says, and can be designed to preserve and enhance natural ecological systems. Now, these are urban reserves, not rural reserves. Help me understand how preserving and enhancing, which is a very noble cause, natural ecological systems is a part of an urban reserve that's going to be developed in streets and presumably industrial uses.
Right. Madam Chair, Vice Chair Burley, I think part of the buy-off with this urban criteria comes from the work that was done to develop it. This comes from a great communities conversation that was occurring with local government, with Metro, several people involved at the table, and I think it goes to the larger question of some future urban design. I don't think this is going to set us up for a template that is going to prevent us from being able to expand areas or urbanize areas. I think it's the idea here with this criteria is to look at a balancing point when you're looking at expansion. So if you can conceivably look forward 10 or 20 years into the future and look at how areas will be developed, you'll look at the expansion, you'll look at a transportation system that considers some of those ecological functions. And I think if I look at this in the detail or the broader context, it probably comes down to dealing with things such as stormwater, water quality, and the elements such as those.
Okay.
Go
ahead. Any other questions for this panel? John, would you like to respond? Or?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may, very briefly, Representative Burley. If you look at the Great Communities handout that's in the package, there's a discussion of what's meant there, and I think it's implicit. One of the problems with our current system, without getting into too much of a soapbox here, is that, as Mr. Stone indicated, it treats ag land as future urban, which in some cases it may well be, other cases it should not be, and it treats all lands as though it's flat and no topography and no streams and no wildlife corridors, no nothing. And what we're hoping to get here is a much more nuanced way of approaching this. There are some areas into which the boundary has expanded where it probably ought not to have, if we were actually looking at ecological values as opposed to simply urban versus agricultural, where you're up onto watersheds and sensitive natural areas where development very likely won't occur ever, but is now part of a boundary where it is presumed to. The idea, I think, is, amongst others, to take that into account when you're looking at your boundary decision, what land you need, where it is, what the impact of development might be on natural features, is there a way to design the development to either enhance or stay off of, and that's part of the calculus into which you plug your land needs generally, not just urban, not just rural or agricultural, but looking at the environmental piece. So that it doesn't cost the communities a lot of money to try to retrofit back into environmental protections in the future, but to recognize the need on the front end as opposed to on the back end.
Thank you. And that's exactly what is happening in Washington County. We're retrofitting a lot of the stormwater, and would have been less expensive to do it differently up front. So thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming in. Next, we have Don Schellenberg, Jim Johnson, and Carol Cheserek. You can all three come up together. It doesn't necessarily mean you're all supporting the same viewpoint, but we're just trying to make sure everybody gets their chance.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The Oregon Farm Bureau supports the use of the urban growth boundaries as a means of dividing agriculture land from urban land. The purpose of designating land within a UGB is to provide space for all urban needs in an efficient manner. While we believe there are situations where cities should not expand because they are surrounded by high-quality farmland, we recognize the criteria for UGB expansions that ultimately allows the UGB to include high-quality farmland. The problem we do have with the criteria is the loophole on RS 215-298 sub 3 that essentially says, never mind the criteria, if we don't think it's reasonable to develop the lower quality farmland, we can take the higher quality farmland. I say that as a backdrop to my comments on Senate Bill 1011, which provides for a combination of identifying urban reserves and rural reserves. Understand that cities can already identify urban reserves, but they are still subject to the criteria of identifying the lowest quality farmland first. In a nutshell, this bill says we are going to allow Metro to identify urban reserves without using the farmland quality criteria, but in return, we're going to require that counties identify rural reserves. That would be land where cities will not go for the next 40 to 50 years and where farmers can make long-term investments with expectation of recovering their investment. We've asked the rhetorical question many times before, that is, Farm Bureau has. The cities have a 20-year billable supply provision in RS 215-298. Where is farms guaranteed 20-year supply of farmland? This bill moves in that direction by providing some certainty with the establishment of rural reserves. However, I would remind the committee that every acre that goes into UGB is still one less acre available for the production of food and fiber. This bill doesn't create one new acre to replace the one being lost. I may be going to mix apples and oranges here a bit, but I believe this committee had the opportunity to augment the creation of more farmland by increasing the use of Columbia River water in the Columbia Basin. It seems the real answer to this dilemma is to replace every acre lost to a UGB with a new irrigated acre. As I have said before, and I will say it again, in spite of what people think, our land use planning system does not protect 1 acre of farmland in perpetuity. We're going to eventually pave over the whole state, or just going to do it in an orderly fashion. In spite of the laudable goals and provisions of Senate Bill 1011, and I believe they are, it still does not solve the problem. We will still eventually pave over the whole state. We are now just going to do it in a more orderly fashion. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to express my frustrations today.
Chair Dingfiller, committee members, my name is Jim Johnson. I'm the Land Use and Water Planning Coordinator for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I guess we're the other ODA. I won't try to take a lot of time. You've already heard from OAN and from Farm Bureau a lot of what the agricultural community is thinking about this. The Department of Agriculture is a part of this coalition that you've been hearing about in previous testimony, and we've had quite an extensive involvement in this process, including quite a bit of analysis of what's been going on around the entire metro region in terms of agriculture. Why we're especially interested in this is that the rural reserves, as Don previously mentioned, will start to help provide some certainty to ag operations in the metro region by the use of rural reserves. The rural reserve, in effect, in my professional opinion, gets at an additional drawback that Metro did not list in their references of drawbacks in the current system, and that is the drawback that Mr. Schellenberg referred to, and that state statute does have a loophole that allows cities to go around the soils hierarchy, so agriculture does not trump all in urban growth boundary amendments, and this would start to help to fill that in by providing a rural reserve process to maybe protect some of those ag lands a little more better than they do under the current system. The department supports the bill as drafted with the lined amendments that you saw that was provided by Metro, and it would be in that form that we would support the bill, and I answer any questions when we're finished.
So you're talking about the proposed amendments that the strikeouts?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Chair Dinkfelder and members of the committee, my name is Carol Chesarek. I'm a resident of the Forest Park neighborhood, and I appreciate the opportunity to share some comments on Senate Bill 1011 with you this afternoon. I'm here to represent our neighborhood association. We've been following Metro's New Look process and the process of this bill, and we're very much in favor of Senate Bill 1011. And I'm here to let you know that average citizens who don't have a financial stake look at this bill and say, oh, that makes sense. Why are we not doing it that way already? We're very tired of fighting contentious UGB expansion battles every 5 years. So we're very pleased to watch Metro go through this very thoughtful process that's behind the New Look and Senate Bill 1011. There were some questions earlier about the value of preserving natural areas and natural features. Not only do those areas contribute to the livability of the area, which I think really helps attract a lot of economic growth and high-value employees to the Portland area, but it's also true if you look at the map of the natural features that's included in the packet that most of these areas are in relatively steeply sloped areas and include a lot of headwater streams. So Metro invested a lot of time and effort and talked with a lot of biologists and outside consultants about what were the natural resources that were most essential to the health and welfare of the region and which helped define the sense of place for the region. It's also true, though, that if you look at development in these areas, you end up harming a lot of headwater streams, and the infrastructure cost of building on those steep slopes gets to be very, very high. So it's also very inefficient to try and develop in those areas. So it's kind of a double negative. We think the proposed system of urban and rural reserves would solve significant regional problems. Today, speculation drives up land prices beyond what farmers can afford. The lack of certainty about where expansion is going to occur discourages farmers from investing in new equipment and barns. It also discourages stewardship and investment in natural areas. Why bother to remove ivy and blackberries and replace them with native plants if the bulldozers are coming in a couple of years? Mm-hmm. So, as someone who's also followed the North Bethany planning process, it's a much less steeply sloped, gently rolling area. There's a tremendous amount of concern about the cost of infrastructure and whether home builders are going to be able to develop that area and make a profit. The lack of certainty that exists in the current system requires Washington County and doing that planning to look all around them. Well, the growth might go here, the growth might go there, the growth might go here. We're not quite sure. So the planning process has to consider all of that, and it gets much longer. And in terms of making decisions about infrastructure investments, you run into what I think of as the 2-4 or 6-lane bridge problem. You need to build a bridge. You're not sure where the growth's going to go. I don't know how big a bridge or how big a sewer system I need to build. So you have to make guesses, and that inevitably is going to end up being less efficient than if you knew where the growth was going to go. We don't have money in our governments these days to spend extra money on inefficiencies. So we feel that the system that Metro is proposing would balance the needs of agricultural urban areas and these important natural resources. We think this is a good adaptation to the strong Senate Bill 100, and we hope that you will move it forward. Okay, thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Yeah, Representative Cannon.
Madam Chair, Ms. Chesarek, I'm very glad that you're here joining these folks who are paid to be here, at least some of them.
We don't make money. We're not looking to make our money by coming into the UGB. So
I understand.
We don't have a direct financial interest here, and yes, nobody's paying me.
Well, I guess maybe that's why I'm putting my question, partly why I'm putting my question to you. Are you at all concerned that you mentioned the contentious UGB expansion battles every 5 years? Are you at all concerned that this bill sort of just shifts those. I mean, there will still be battles over where, in fact, they arguably will be as contentious as our current ones, but they'll be happening over what's urban reserve and what's rural reserve. So help me through that.
I think the way we look at it is right now we have to fight those battles every 5 years. This bill would allow us to fight a really big, nasty battle once and then be done with it and go home and live our lives for 20 to 30 years before we have to fight that big battle again. So, you know, it just seems to me like it's really a win-win all the way around because it helps with the infrastructure. It helps protect some of these important natural areas. It should be goodness for everybody. Except some small finance, some narrow economic special interests. So I hope that helps. Thank you.
Any other questions? Carol, would you like to comment, although the vice chair is not here, who asked the question about forestry, the fact that the forestry wasn't called
covering.
Out in the way that agricultural was. So if agricultural interests were, if you have any comments on that, since you represent the largest forested park in the U.S.?
Well, I'd be reluctant to speak for forestry interests because I think the man sitting to my left, although he represents agriculture, is more knowledgeable about that than I am. Certainly, Multnomah County, we actually had a meeting with them this morning, is very much in favor where a lot of those forested areas, so Forest Park neighborhood, a lot of the forested areas in Multnomah County, some of them are in the park, some of them are outside of the park, further towards the Coast Range. I can tell you that Multnomah County is very much in favor of this bill, and I think they feel that it's going to help them protect not only the Forest Park area, but these other forestry areas further out and manage them effectively for forestry. It reduces it. It's similar to what it does for the agricultural lands, but agricultural lands, I think they're, you were speaking earlier, Representative Burley, about all of the bazillion different rules. There's a lot of rules around forestry, but I don't know that there's quite as many as there are around agricultural areas. This just helps simplify things and, again, sort of set those forested areas potentially aside if it seems like it's important to protect them in the longer term, maintain the healthy streams and those other attributes. Does that help a little bit? I know Multnomah County is very much behind this bill and actually helped with the drafting. So,
question?
Well, yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to respond to that, I mean, don't, you know, I mean, having sponsored and passed the Community Forest Authority Bill in 2005 and Forest Legacy with Representative Holby this year, I mean, I understand and support trying to make sure we keep working forests and working forest condition, but my concern is that when the bill currently says that, you know, to be rural reserve, it has to sustain long-term agricultural operations, has to have, you know, these types of things. But we don't offer any of those criteria for forestry. So conceivably, we could create a forestry reserve and not manage it. We could take a managed working forest today, put it in a rural reserve, and lock it up and not cut another tree out of it.
I don't think that's what this says. I think what this does is it protects that forest from urban development. So first you'd have to have an agreement between the county and Metro that it was appropriate to put in a rural reserve there. Multnomah County, I know, is interested in maintaining the forestry in the western part of the county, so I don't think that would be an issue with them. But then beyond that, all that does is it says, even if you've got the rural reserve set up, it just says we're not going to put urban development into that area for a longer period of time. It should help with your forestry because you can get long-term planning. You have that certainty that the urban growth boundary isn't coming. Like a farmer, it's more important. You know, you can invest in.
No, and I understand that, and I don't mean to be argumentative, but, for example, where it says that when designated rural reserve, I'm sorry, I'm getting tangled here today. Rural reserve, significantly exceed on that, is capable, for example, it says, is capable of sustaining long-term agricultural operations. Well, why don't we say, in addition, is also capable of sustaining or capable of sustaining long-term forestry operations?
But by the fact that we're silent on that, I would submit that under this bill as written, we could create a rural reserve with a block of forest land and never cut another stick of wood off of that piece of property, because we're not saying that it has to be continue to be managed.
This doesn't, I believe this doesn't change any of the underlying zoning or uses.
Chair Dinkfelder, Representative Burley. Yeah, the urban reserve as it's established is in a sense an overlay that sets areas targeted for urbanization. In the interim, it doesn't change the zoning whatsoever. So if it's zoned for forestry, that's the primary use that it would be utilized for. If it's zoned for agriculture, that's what its primary use would be for. So it's in a sense an overlay over the current zoning. The use wouldn't change until it's actually brought into the urban growth boundary.
Okay, well last follow up. That's very, very helpful. Thank you. I still though then given that, why do we have this language in here with respect to agriculture and not any of these other potential uses?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, it's because the ag industry is suspicious. Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that happy note, we will call up the next panel. Thank you very much. And we will, again, have the Forestry Department come up, so I'm sure they may have some comments on that here in a little bit. Roger Martin, Brent Curtis, and Kelly Ross. It's like a blast from the past, all the Washington County people coming up.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I represent a group called Friends of Stafford. Stafford is that area, if you were on I-205 after you just turned off of I-5, you took the first exit, which says Stafford Road and Lake Oswego. If you turn left towards Lake Oswego, it's the area pinned between the city of Lake Oswego and the city of West Lynn and I-205. These are folks who probably are well described in the Metro piece about nobody's happy with the planning process. Their argument is not necessarily with Metro. Their argument is, we have sat here as people develop all around us and no planning has gone on in our area. We illogically don't have any agricultural qualities at all. There are people that have owned property for 100 years. At one time they were agriculture, now they can't do that anymore. And they want to know what can be done, and they have been considered several times for inclusion in the urban growth boundary and not quite made it. Not necessarily because of Metro. Several times have been asked by the city of West Lynn, the city of Lake Oswego, later, just go away and be quiet, and we'll get around to you sometime in the future. We held up the other bill briefly over in the Senate that you worked on, House Bill 2051. We sat down, worked out a thoughtful process with Metro, and we're here today to support this bill because I lived in the area just beyond that, which is on the other side of I-205, and it's the result of no planning that we end up with horrible kinds of things. Yeah, the previous chairman of Metro, Mike Burton, used to call the area I lived in the area of mini farms, martini farms, 5-acre minimums, and they were wonderful except you don't have water serviced unless you drill a well, and you don't have sewers, so you have septic tanks. And now, guess that I've fortunately sold and got out of the area because the traffic problems were horrendous also. You didn't have proper traffic problems. Planning is really necessary because now there's a water problem developing and the groundwater is being depleted. The water table's dropping in this area. So it cries for the proper kind of planning, which is what this bill is all about, and I hope you'll support that. Now, with another hat, just briefly, I want to refer to page, put my glasses on to read it, page 4, up the criteria for the urban areas, and talk about walkable and served by well-connected system of streets. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association, and let me pick on another part of the state to illustrate why this is so important. A few years ago in Medford area, they developed a whole new housing project designed single-story for seniors. They didn't design the streets well enough for a bus to get on the streets. So we can't, the folks in Southern Oregon in the Rogue Valley Transportation District cannot serve this neighborhood by a bus because you can't get around the corners and through the streets. That's why planning is so important, to get these done before people develop these properties. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Ross, and I'm representing the Oregon chapter of NAOP, the National Association of Industrial and Office Properties. Our members are the folks who develop commercial and industrial properties and also provide services and sale of those properties. We're probably one of the last to join the circle of believers on this bill. We had many of the same concerns and questions articulated by Representative Burley, but I'm generally comfortable now in coming before you to support it. The amendments that you'll see formalized on Wednesday, along with the statement of legislative intent on this that hopefully will be signed on by everyone involved with the bill, gives us comfort in proceeding to the next phase of this that will be the LCDC administrative rules. Unlike Mr. Chandler, our fears were that as bad as the current system is, it could actually be made worse. And that's what was driving the changes that we tried to make in the bill. We appreciate the patience of Metro and the other parties in addressing our concerns and look forward to the next round of discussions on this.
Thank you.
Right. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Brent Curtis. I'm the planning manager for Washington County, and I'm here today on behalf of the Board of County Commissioners. The bottom line for us is we urge you to support 1011 with the amendments that Mr. Tucker described and Kelly just talked about briefly. For us, this started about 4 years ago, and for us, I mean for the local governments of Washington County, including the cities and the county itself. Approximately 4 years ago, we got together and said to ourselves, it doesn't appear that this urban growth boundary process is working very well for very many folks. Why don't we get the urban community together and the farm community in Washington County and find out if we can validate or if our opinion was disputed? And ultimately, what we found out is that both the farm community and the urban communities were not happy at all with the UGB process, and they described to us what we came to call a lose-lose situation. We asked them if they would like to work on developing a win-win situation to both enhance the urban economy and the rural economy, and they urged us to do that. It's important to recognize that we're not trading one economy off for another. They're both important to Washington County. They're both important to the region. They're both important to the state. So as a result of that, we garnered the participation and involvement of Metro, of DLCD, and the Department of Ag, and it led to a work process that that got folded into the new look and ultimately provided you with this legislation. So this is very, very important for us to look at, and we urge your support of it. We continue to be concerned about making sure that the bill works. We understand that this causes a lot of people some concern, and we work very hard to join the coalition that Metro put together and to work on productive amendments that are responsive to people's concerns, and we'll continue to do so. I would like to very quickly respond to a couple of questions that you asked that you didn't get answers to, and I'll try to be brief. Madam Chair, you ask, where are the cities? Again, for us, co-equals in Washington County are the cities, and our perhaps senior partner in this effort is the city of Hillsborough in working forward with this. And so our cities are very much involved in this discussion, and we think, Mayor Hughes is here today, I would be surprised if he doesn't wholeheartedly support the concepts in Senate Bill 1011. The reason that the agreements are with Metro and the counties is because of two important things in the Oregon planning process. The first one is, who's a coordinating entity? Someone ultimately has to be responsible for coordinating and ensuring things are consistent. And inside the urban growth boundary, that's Metro. outside the urban growth boundary, that's the county. The second important thing is relatively who regulates what. Metro regulates the urban growth boundary, and they regulate urban reserves today, and it seems logical that under a new alternative system they would do that again. So they have the authority to make the call for urban reserves. Outside the urban growth boundary, land is regulated both for farming and forestry and the like by counties. And so this is a new kind of bilateral kind of approach that has the entities that are both responsible for coordination and regulation ensuring that they agree together on carrying those things out. It doesn't mean that we won't involve the cities in Washington County, both at the metro level and at the county level, for being involved in the planning process, nor the service districts of the county as well. The second thing I wanted to really briefly comment about was the question that Representative Burley asked about the particular section that calls for LCDC to consult with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. As Mr. Johnson just indicated to you, there's a lot of emphasis on agricultural interests, and as I think he so gracefully put it, it's because they're suspicious. They were there, and their concerns are registered in the bill. And that same concern is registered in that consultation section. But that doesn't mean that the other agencies won't be consulted. LCDC has the responsibility to reach out to all of the other state agencies, and I'm sure that the participants are going to want the other state agencies to participate in that process. And while the Department of Ag may have been singled out, I feel very confident the other state agencies that are going to have vital interest will be represented in the rulemaking. At least that's our hope. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for the panel? Okay. Thank you very much. Next, I will call up. We are fortunate to have the mayor of Wilsonville here, Charlotte Lahan, and the mayor of the city of Hillsboro, Tom Hughes. And then I'll also ask the Department of Forestry to tag along there so you can address questions that Representative Burley has raised. And I think we have Joe Mizek. Mizek. Welcome. Yes. Thanks for coming to the Capitol today.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the House Energy and Environment Committee, my name is Charlotte Lehan. I'm the mayor of the city of Wilsonville. I also serve on MPAC as a representative of the small cities of Clackamas County. I am here to speak in support of Senate Bill 1011, and I can I won't go through all my testimony specifically because a lot of it is repetitious of what you've heard already. But I will say that the 2004 process, urban growth boundary expansion, was extremely contentious for my community in particular. We had hearings with 500, 600 people turning out who were extremely upset. It was a difficult process for us as a city to figure out the infrastructure that was being expected of us in these proposed urban areas because it seemed to come at us all of a sudden, areas we hadn't planned for. And so we are looking to this. It's something of a leap of faith because we know there's a lot of rulemaking yet to be done, but we're hoping that this is a better process than the previous one and that it will give some long-term certainty and stability that will allow both on the agriculture side to do long-term investments in agricultural lands, but also for urban areas to effectively plan for where infrastructure needs to be so that we're not caught unable to serve areas when they do come in. We would ask that you support this. We're in favor of the amendments that were put forward by the working group. We would caution that you would reject any amendments that are for special interests or specific properties that may come forward, but we do support those from the working group.
Thank you. Chair Hughes.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to appear before you today. I also have submitted written testimony And rather than just go over the written testimony, let me extend a little bit on what I was going to say, particularly since I was just identified as the senior member of the coalition. Actually, it makes me feel a little bit older than maybe I should. We worked long and hard to come to this point, I think, and it really did start 4 years ago as we began to pull together our ag community and our industrial community. And for those of you who are not as familiar with Hillsboro, we really are growing rapidly economically in both directions. We have a very visible high-tech economy that I think everybody is pretty much aware of, but at the same time, we're the center of probably the most rapidly growing nursery stock industry, component of the industry in the state. Agriculture has always been part of Hillsboro's history, and we want it to maintain a part of our future. And so going to the ag friends in agriculture that operated oftentimes operate around Hillsboro but live in Hillsboro to say, you know, what are your needs and what is it really about to make sure that you have long-term future? The answer that they gave us was the same answer that we got from the industrial side, and that was we need assurances that when we need to do what we need to do, we'll be able to do it. If we're going to make investments in our land, we want to make sure that we're going to be able to continue to farm for at least 40 to 50 years. And you can't do that if you're going to site subdivisions to completely surround us at some time in the future with people clamoring to have us stop tilling in the evening and spraying and doing all of the things that farmers tend to do in order to make farming productive. And it was remarkably similar to what the urban interests were also saying, which is give us some certainty. From the standpoint of the cities, I think certainty is also important. We have to know as we plan subdivisions that are within the urban growth boundary but alongside of the urban growth boundary, what size sewers to use, where the roads are going to go, and subsequently how are those going to match up with what we do outside the urban growth boundary. And I think partly in answer to Representative Burley's question, we also need to know if we have natural habitat features on the urban side, are those natural habitat features going to extend in whatever development takes place on the other side of the urban growth boundary? So having the Goal 5 natural habitat features, quite frankly, in the Portland area, in both of our communities, the natural habitat features are a major component of how we do our development. So those would also be considered almost as part of the infrastructure. So for those reasons, that certainty, we believe that Senate Bill 1011 gives us that certainty, and so we would urge that you support it with the amendments as represented today.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the House Energy and Environment Committee, for the record, my name is Joe Mishak. I'm a policy analyst with the Department of Forestry, and the Department of Forestry takes a neutral position on Senate Bill 1011A. We're here today to let the committee know that we'll be an active participant in rulemaking should Senate Bill 1011A become law, but that we've not been involved in the process to date. We'll work with the forest community towards identifying key criteria for the rules related to forest and rural reserves, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Yes.
Representative Burley.
Thank you. Joe, thanks. I appreciate your comments very much, and I appreciate you pointing out that the department will be part of this process, and even though you're not specifically mentioned in the bill. So I'm glad to hear that, and if there's anybody in the audience from LCDC, I'd sure like to hear that from them as well. Thank you, Joe.
Any other questions from panel?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your input. We do have somebody from GSFD here, so if we have time, I'll call them up at the end. Okay, next I'd like to invite up Hasina Squires and Steve Pfeiffer. And then also I'm going to ask Jonathan Schlater, I can never say your name, Schlater, I think that's it, come up.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Hasina Squires here today on behalf of my client, Chris Melitas, representing Langdon Farms. I would like to just speak really briefly to amendments that were proposed on the House side. or on the Senate side, with respect to Senate Bill 1011, Mayor Lehan indicated in her testimony that she urged you to reject any amendments to Senate Bill 1011 that would allow special consideration by any one property owner or by a special interest group. And on that Senate side, we did propose an amendment to the bill that would have said that land designated as a rural reserve must be outside a UGB and may not include land that's outside or outside and adjacent to an urban growth boundary that's designated by LCDC as prime industrial land. And I take it that that was seen as something that was a special interest type of amendment. We have presented the dash A6 amendments for consideration to this committee, and I would strongly object to any statement that that particular amendment benefits one single property owner. The amendment is on page 3 of the printed and gross bill after line 5 that says is subject to land, it would add the language, is subject to a statewide land use planning goal relating to stable and healthy economies, which is goal 9, the economic development goal. And if that is something that's a special interest and not of a regional benefit, I guess I would stand corrected by Mayor Lehan. With that, I'd like to have our attorney, Steve Pfeiffer, with Perkins Coie, speak to the dash A6 amendment.
Madam Chair, do we have the dash A6s anywhere in our package?
No. No, maybe you should read the amendment since we don't have it in front of us.
Sure. On page 3 of the bill, after line 5, it would add a new sub C that says, is subject to a statewide land use planning goal relating to stable and healthy economies.
So maybe you can explain for the committee what your proposal of this amendment, what the intent of the amendment is to do.
Mr. Pfeiffer would be pleased to do so.
Chair Dinkfelder, members of the committee, Stephen Pfeiffer, address 1120 Northwest Cooch, Portland. Here with Hasina on behalf of Langdon Farms, who are the owners of the Langdon Farms golf course, you may know, just south of Wilsonville and surrounding lands as well. Along with many others in the room, we've been through, both on behalf of these clients, but more importantly in a broader way, the urban growth management battles, if you will. And it is long overdue, at least in our opinion, this bill. It's a good bill. It makes sense, and we're here to support the bill together with the amendments. It represents a bold step on behalf of all parties. You've heard a number of people today from all persuasions say that we go forward with a lot of optimism and no small amount of trepidation on specific issues. Our sole issue, or the sole recommendation we would make to you and urge you to consider, is the amendment which Hasina just read. Perhaps better known as Goal 9, statewide planning Goal 9 of the 19 statewide planning goals, is the economic goal. The words in the sentence that which Hasina just read, stable and healthy economies, comes from the statewide planning goal 9. It's essentially the goal that which directs cities and counties, and as of this date, not metro, but cities and counties throughout the state, to plan for economic development as they entertain both their existing land supply and expand their urban growth boundaries. The bill has seen a new vigor in the last few years. The administrative rule was amended. There were a number of positive changes, all made, again, as directions to local governments in the course of comprehensive planning. It requires local governments, for instance, cities and counties, to undertake an economic opportunity analysis, to identify trends over time which they expect the economy in their communities, both collectively and individually, to require them to address in terms of buildable lands. And we're talking about employment lands primarily here, industrial and commercial. It requires them to identify significant changes in the types of industry, the acreage that might be required to accommodate those, and perhaps most importantly from our concern today, it requires them to identify and establish not just a long-term supply of buildable employment land, but a competitive short-term supply, meaning basically 3 to 5 years. Planning in this state, for appropriate and well-proven reasons, takes a long time. At the same time, we have demands for economic land supplies both in small communities and metro as a whole. Now, having said that, statewide planning goal 9 has been found not to apply to metro. Now, in the other cities, when they undertake that analysis, trends, strategic short-term supply, how much acreage is needed, they are the keepers in those smaller, not even smaller, but other communities of the urban growth boundary. So it's relatively easy and straightforward for them to implement their findings and their needs and their justification for a land supply increase by expanding the urban growth boundary. Those cities and the urban counties in our region, in the metro region, don't have that authority because, as you well know, metro is the keeper of the boundary. So it seems to us there's a bit of a disconnect. We've felt this over time, at least in some ways, but I think it becomes more paramount in 10-11. We're now talking about a 40-year rural reserve potential. And there's no doubt that there are many positives associated with that, and we have every reason to believe they'll be appropriately cited. But with that comes a 40-year set-aside. And if there's a time and place when we suggest Metro needs to be at the table assessing, as the region, those same factors which cities and counties are forced to do elsewhere within the state for looking ahead, what the economy will require of us, how much land will be required, and where we can maintain both the short-term long supply, now's the time. We think that boundary connection has been missing to date, and we think it's even more imperative, frankly, when we are talking about, as we are for very good reason, 40 years reserve periods. Last thought, you know, this bill, 1011, isn't about single properties. It's not even about a single city. It's about the economic region of Metro, the economic engine of this state, by almost any measure. It's a place where I believe, and our clients believe, we should move forward with 1011 and the amendments. But if there is a time when we really need to link Goal 9 and the analysis that's otherwise required of every other city and urban county in the state to that decision, it's with this bill.
Thank you. Jonathan?
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Schleter, Executive Director of Westside Economic Alliance. It's a business advocacy group representing the employers, the developers, the commercial property managers, and well as the community partners, local governments, and public agencies serving the west side of the Portland metro region. That includes all of Washington County and portions of Clackamas County that stride I-5 from Lake Oswego down through Wilsonville. As you've already heard in today's testimony by four of my members who are flanking me in this hearing and testimony, this bill has widespread and popular support among the public sector members and public agencies of our region. That is a very good step. That is a very positive development, and we're very encouraged by that. Among the private sector members of our organization, there has been reluctance and hesitation because of the uncertainty that this bill casts. And as you've heard, as bad as the current system is, it could be worse. And the concern was that we don't want to make it worse because we have to live with the implications of our decisions for two generations of our community. And because we represent 50% of the economic strength of the state of Oregon, those are pretty high stakes. We don't want to fail. We can't screw this up. And so we are very concerned about that. And Representative Burley, if I might speak to some of the questions that you posed, I was very encouraged by those questions because our members have been asking us those same questions over the last several months as we've tried to understand the image and the ambitions of this legislation. The definitions of natural boundaries of urbanization that limit urban development or help define appropriate natural boundaries for urbanization is pretty ambiguous, and to each person in this room probably means something different. How that means and what this will mean to us 30, 40, and 50 years from now is really quite open to discussion. And further, to enhance the natural ecological systems within the urban areas, that too has been an object of concern to us. So I did very much appreciate your question. The private sector members of our group had a number of other questions that I would like to pose to your consideration and for the legislative history and record of this bill, because I think it bears examination here. For the past five decades in Oregon, we have provided deferred farmland property tax assessments for EFU zoning in the state. We wanted to protect the viable farming activities of this state, and so we've given farmers a deferred tax assessment, limiting their tax base on the value of that farmland. Well, if we're going to create these rural reserves around the Portland metro region and declare off limits the agricultural operations in those areas for two generations, don't we obviate the need for EFU zoning and obviate the need for deferred farm taxation? At a time when we're having trouble budgeting the balance, balancing the budget of our state, can we really afford a redundant tax subsidy for certain landowners in this state? I haven't found a satisfactory answer to that question yet, and we are still asking that of you. Secondly, the question of interjurisdictional disputes between governments, because as you've heard, you have the broad support of the counties and metro government in this planning process, but how do you work through the differences of ambitions or intentions that Multnomah might have with Clackamas County or that Clackamas might have with Washington County? How do you work those through? Maybe that is addressed in your amendments. I don't have the privilege of those amendments in front of me to be able to make that assessment or be able to offer that to our members yet. Third, in Section 3, page 2, the Department of Agriculture is given the authorization or opportunity to consult with the LCDC and the goal setting and rule making for this legislation in defining the rural reserves that will carve up our region for the next two generations. That is a very positive step for the agricultural interests of this state. And I was very encouraged by the answer and explanation that Mr. Curtis from Washington County offered about the other agencies being consulted by LCDC, because yes, we think that the Department of Transportation, we think that OECDD has a stake in this process as well in defining where the transportation corridors or access to not only the urban areas but also serving the rural areas of our state are going to be defined. And for OECDD and for Governor Kulongoski and their ambitions to create 100 certified developable industrial parcels within the metro region, that has to be addressed. And I don't know that that is considered in this legislation yet. There's room for improvement in this legislation, surely. And you've heard that there is a willingness to work this out. And to the extent that you have, with this bill, the support of the public agency partners, the local governments, counties, and metro government working together to make that work, members of Westside Economic Alliance will support this bill with the partnership that it brings. And we have the support of our public sector partners, and we offer that support for this legislation today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative McPherson.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for Mr. Pfeiffer. I'm trying to understand the impact of the language that's proposed in the Dash A6 amendments. It comes at the end of what's now a series of just two criteria for designation and protection of rural reserves, and those now in the bill would carve out Measure 37 claims, as it would state that the property that's being designated as a rural reserve can't be subject to a Measure 37 claim and doesn't fall within the legal remedies provisions that are generally right to farm and nuisance and so on. This in B on line 4 of page 3. The addition of this C language is subject to a statewide land use planning goal relating to stable and healthy economies. It sounds like a rather indirect way of getting at of the result that I think your clients are looking for. So help me understand how this gets them to where they want to be and how that impacts broader policy issues.
Chair Dingfelder, Representative McPherson, my short answer is the magic of legislative counsel. Our concept was a little more direct in the form of it was simply say that the establishment of urban and rural reserves pursuant to 1011 would be subject to a demonstration of compliance with statewide planning goal 9. When it came back from legislative council, it ended up in that location with these words. These words are only repeated in the goals themselves in goal 9. So that I can get to. Why they're here, it's construction, I think is what it amounts to. In the broader sense, in terms of our interests in our particular area, again, this doesn't do anything necessarily for a particular piece of dirt, be it ours or others, in the next round of expansions. What it does is, on a region-wide basis, ask Metro, or require really of Metro, to go through that same planning policy, investigation as to national trends, short-term supply determinations, which cities otherwise are required to go through as they address their boundary expansion needs. And, you know, it may be that this particular piece of property surrounding Langdon Farms, be it in combination with ours and other owners or elsewhere, falls somewhere inside or outside that analysis. Other properties will fall otherwise. It's really an attempt to look at, if we're going to be looking at a 40 to 50 year window for rural reserves, for reasons which we can fully appreciate, then it seems even more imperative that we, in this dynamic society, as the global economy gathers around us as it has, it's even more important that we put a little finer pen to the economic analysis in terms of the land supply needs, the nature of them, and specifically the location, at a time when infrastructure, last time I looked, was harder to come by rather than easier, hence the short-term serviceable component.
So your aim and the instruction given to Ledge Council was that the criteria for designating rural reserves should include the economic development potential for perhaps other than agricultural purposes of the property that's being designated or not as a rural reserve. Is that
and urban? And urban representative. It's the goal itself, which is very broadly stated, and the administrative rule.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And the administrative rule, which is more specific. The last point I would leave you with is we often see in legislative, particularly in terms of statewide planning goals, we have 19 statewide planning goals. Ocean resources is not going to apply in many cases, and so it's often the applicable provisions of the applicable goals. In this case, I'm the first to admit, there are portions of that goal which I don't think would pertain to a regional metro analysis. Some of the more specific, and by the same token, there are portions of it that apply to smaller cities that wouldn't apply to the larger city. So it is the applicable portions of statewide planning goal 9 in the rule.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and I will be calling up Metro's attorney to address that here shortly after we hear our last panel. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jonathan, I'd like to go back to your comment about the redundancy in the tax
policies.
I'm not quite sure I followed that, and particularly with reference to where in the bill.
Well, it's not in the bill, but for the past 5 decades or more in Oregon, we've provided EFU zoning or designated EFU zoning and given farmers a tax break. Don Schellenberg or Jim might be able to speak to this much more authoritatively than I, but basically it means taxing the farmland at farmland values to keep the farmers away from the phone and off the phone with the developers that might want to buy them out and develop them. This predates even LCDC and Senate Bill 100. And the question comes, if we have carved up the map and designated Sobeys Island in Multnomah County, for example, as a rural reserve, it rather obviates the need for a deferred farm taxation or EFU zoning. I think that becomes redundant at that point. And so I don't know why you want to protect them under metro jurisdiction in the Tri-County region and give them a farmland tax deferral as well. It seems redundant to me. And I'm not sure what the resolution or address or outfall of that may be. I would like to know what that is going to face, because we, as you've already heard, there's a large agricultural presence in both, well, all three metro counties that will be impacted one way or the other. And I would suggest that the landowners have an important stake in the answer to that question.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, last panel, and then we will call up Metro to come back up after this, is Mary Kyle McCurdy, Stephen Gaffori, and Art Schlack. Then I'll have Metro on deck. Mary Kyle, you can get started.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We support Senate Bill 1011 with the amendments as described by Metro. We've been part of the group that has met over weeks and weeks to craft this bill, and it does represent a compromise and an agreement and a leap of faith for all of us. The concept of jointly designating urban and rural reserves offers the opportunity for long-term stability and certainty for both the urban area and the agricultural industry. But more importantly, or as importantly, it also offers the possibility for Metro and really the rest of us to focus our resources on two critical missions that we have not been able to focus enough attention on. First, how to use the land within the existing urban growth boundary with appropriate expansions more efficiently. And second, how to finance the infrastructure necessary to actually use the land brought into the urban growth boundary. This is a huge challenge, as you are undoubtedly aware. Metro can designate all the land anyone wants for urban development, but it's not going to happen without roads, sewers, and water. As part of this overall process that Metro is engaged in, it is looking at other financing mechanisms to bring that type of infrastructure to these lands. And it's time that we all devoted our kind of attention to those kinds of issues, and not to squabbles every 5 years over the UGB expansion issues. We do not support any other amendments that we've heard about that we haven't necessarily seen before you yet. And with that, I'll end my testimony and take any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member of the committee, my name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here representing the South Cooper Mountain Landowners Association. You've heard a lot of concepts and abstract discussions of theory and policy. I want to talk to you about some actual land on the ground where we are. A group of landowners supporting this bill. South Cooper Mountain Landowners Association own about 1,400 acres of developable land that abuts the city of Beaverton in Washington County. It's the side of a hill. It's very rocky. There's some of it is farmable, but most of it is not. It's mostly now exception land zoned. We've been working with Metro as they've been developing this plan. And we're very supportive of the concept of an urban reserve. What we'd like to have happen is to have this whole area designed, designated as an urban reserve. And then we obviously don't need that much land to be brought in at one time. But as land is needed, as the population estimates suggest, we would bring in portions of this. Now, the advantage would be that we'd be planning the whole area at first. So we'd know where the roads are going to be, where the high-density housing would be, where the low-density housing would be, where the, to answer Representative Burley's question, so we've got some ravines in this area that are natural wildlife areas. We will protect those early on before people later said, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen now, the ravine. We'd have that all in the initial plan years and years and years before it actually got developed. So we'd know where it was going to be, what land is going to be protected and what land is going to be developed. Then, on a piecemeal basis, as the need arises, portions of this will be brought in to the urban growth boundary as developable land. But it would not be, on a piecemeal basis that would be not part of an overall plan. So we're very supportive of the concept.
Okay. Mr.
Schott? Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And here to lend our voice in support of the passage of Senate Bill 1011. With the amendments that have been brought to you today from Metro at this point, I think the cities, the counties, the interest groups that have participated in the development of the bill in a consensus manner are to be congratulated with this undertaking and the recommendations they brought to you in that spirit. As a former planner, I think this is a major step forward. I worked for Washington County for 17 years at this point, worked for Multnomah County. I think that providing some stability and providing some guidance in terms of the urban reserves so that infrastructure funding can be undertaken will be significant in terms of allowing or providing for the Portland metropolitan area to move forward in providing for Washington County, Multnomah County, and Clackamas County to deal with a number of issues that they have been over the last 3 or 4 years in terms of having areas designated for urban development but not having the wherewithal to provide infrastructure to those areas so you can bring them online. This is, I think, one of the primary ways that you can do that. Couple of observations, Madam Chair. First, I think it's extremely important that in this undertaking there's a level playing field. And I think that the level playing field is provided by the fact that you do have a consensus a consensus recommendation before you, and I think that anything that would be brought forward that would detract from that consensus would potentially jeopardize the outcome of this endeavor at this point. So I commend the bill and the amendments that have that consensus to you. The other observation that I would make is Representative Burley, I think, makes a good point knowing that on the east side of the Portland metropolitan area you have state federal forests, and on the west side you have state forests and major private timber holdings at this point. So I think that even though it may not be said, but maybe it should, and it would be easy to make those amendments, assuming that you are going to get amendments on in Wednesday for work session, to mention at least long-term forestry or forestry in the same breath that you mention agriculture would certainly be appropriate. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Mary, I'm curious. You haven't had a chance to see this A6 amendment
about
adding gold mine. What's your thoughts on that, though, just in general?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, I have not seen the amendment. Although this entity has brought a related amendment before in the Senate, I have a couple of thoughts. One is this issue of Metro's responsibility as it relates to Goal 9 is not a new one, and it's not a simple one in terms of what role Metro has in Goal 9 versus the cities and counties in the Metro region. And it's this discussion has come up in Metro's previous expansions of its urban growth boundary and planning long-term land for industrial and other uses. And it is a controversial and large issue that the region is struggling with. They've had this discussion with LCDC, and I think that inserting this language in the bill could potentially have unintended consequences. There's not necessarily a consensus from local governments. I don't want to speak on behalf of local governments, but watching the discussion take place at Metro and before LCDC in previous forums, it shows me there's not a consensus as to just the role Metro should have in Goal 9. And so I think that's a much longer-term discussion. This has just come up now. And secondly, putting on a cynical hat that I usually don't wear, this is coming to you from an entity that has an interest in one particular piece of property that is also extremely controversial. So this is an effort to, obviously, that's what their interest is in developing a particular piece of land that is very controversial. So, and I do think that, as Art Schleck said, that has the possibility of breaking the coalition that has come together over this particular bill and the consensus that's come over this particular bill. When Metro and the local governments go about designating urban and rural reserves, we all know we will have one long, hopefully not too long, contentious discussion, as we should. People care about where they live. They ought to be involved. It should be contentious. And then urban and rural reserves will be designated. And that is the forum for this kind of a discussion over particular pieces of land. And then as the urban growth boundary is expanded incrementally every 5 years, those discussions will be much less controversial because we'll already know it's going into the urban reserve, and we know where those urban reserves are. So I think that's just a huge issue that could complicate and thwart this bill, really, both Goal 9 and this particular piece of property. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I'd like to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ask Dan Cooper from Metro Council to come up. And then I saw that DLCD had submitted testimony. Would you like to come up and say anything on the record? Okay.
Madam Chair, members.
Actually, we'll have DLCD come up because I think we want to ask him about this amendment as well. Thank you. Mr. Cooper.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Cooper. I serve as Metro's head attorney. I want to try to briefly address the Goal 9 issues because we have seen the Dash 6 amendments and had the same question that Representative McPherson did, exactly what do you mean by this? Mm-hmm. I've had a chance to talk to Mr. Pfeiffer. I've listened to his testimony, and I take him at face value that his intent is that Metro should demonstrate compliance with Goal 9 in establishing urban reserves and rural reserves. And since rural reserves are areas where you're never going to put industry or other employment activity other than agriculture. I think he's mostly focused on the urban reserve issue. There are pieces to Goal 9, particularly as it's defined in the Goal 9 rule, that make it very difficult. And as he said, there's pieces of it that we wouldn't attend, only the applicable pieces. Well, part of the mischief here is what's applicable and what's not. And second, I think I want to, before I get to those details, back up a little bit and talk about what Metro does do with the urban growth boundary decisions and what the language of the bill, particularly as it's going to be amended in the amendments which we've prepared, will deal with the urban reserve issue as well. And that is, Goal 14 does require Metro, and we do make sure that there is an adequate 20-year supply of land inside the urban growth boundary for all employment uses, retail, commercial, industrial. And we've taken that responsibility seriously. In 2002, when we made our first recommendation for moving the earth growth boundary to LCDC, we acknowledged that we hadn't completed the mission on the employment lands. They, with our concurrence, remanded it back to the Metro Council for further work on it. In 2004, the council again added more land to the urban growth boundary specifically for import, industrial, and employment purposes. Mayor Lehan referred to that decision as being one of the most difficult ones that she went through, and then certainly my council. In response to another remand of that decision in 2004, the council completed an addition of some land outside the city of Hillsboro, which went to the commission, and they've acknowledged it. So we've completed that process, and we have that adequate supply. In designating the urban reserves, the bill specifically refers to the economy, having a healthy economy, and the amendments propose to add the word urban economy into the bill to signal that that is exactly what Representative Burley assumed. That's industrial land. That's the kind of economy you have inside of urban growth boundaries. Now, I want to acknowledge what 1,000 friends would tell you is that the urban economy includes important pieces of the agricultural economy because crops are processed and shipped and taken care of, and in the case of Portland, there's a significant amount of activity of the Port of Portland that is agricultural from around the whole state, in fact, parts of the Northwest. So the agricultural economy does fit inside the urban economy. But we believe we do have that responsibility to make sure there's an adequate long-term supply of land. Where Goal 9 becomes problematic as applied to Metro are things like short-term. Short-term land supply is about how do you make sure that land that's inside an urban growth boundary has the infrastructure, is properly zoned, and can be put on the market readily. That's something that cities, and in the case of unincorporated counties, have responsibility for under Goal 9. And that includes this study of where the trends are going, what the local preferences are for the types of industry and employment uses that the local community wants. What are the public facility plans? What are the zone map designations? There are the idea that Goal 9 doesn't apply to Metro is not necessarily viewed by a lot of Metro staff people as a good thing, because it means we don't have the authority to adopt requirements for local governments that the local governments in a region really would prefer that we not do. The city of Troutdale is not interested in Metro being the person, the entity to decide the fate of the Alcoa plant, which is now closed, and the question of whether it should be a freight yard for one of the railroads as proposed by the Port of Portland, or whether it would be available for more of a community-oriented resort-type commercial area along the Columbia River, which is what the city of Troutdale thinks its highest and best use are. Both of them employment really is a local decision in our view.
Okay, thank you. We have about 2 minutes left, so see if there are any other questions or follow-up, Representative Burley.
Before I ask the department to respond, I guess, you know, and this whole Metro thing, I mean, thank goodness we don't have one of these in Central Oregon. I don't understand all this stuff.
When you get to 1.5 million
right,
population,
I said just wait, represent early. It's coming to a county near you soon, I think.
Completely notwithstanding the source of this amendment, I'm sitting here trying to understand and listen to this rationale on why it should or why it shouldn't. And, you know, I've had some documentation provided to me where the department said in October of 2004, or actually it was before that, this was Metro's letter to the department, taking exception to the fact that the department contends that Goal 9 does apply to Metro. And I'm listening to your arguments, and I'm looking at Chapter 268 here, where it says, for example, 268.030, purpose of the chapter, subject to the provisions of a district charter, a district where formed shall provide for those aspects of land use planning having metropolitan significance. Well, to me, it would seem like, and I'm ignorant about these different goals. I'm not that involved in land use planning. But if we're talking about economic development or growth or Goal 9, isn't that something that has metropolitan significance?
Madam Chair, respectively, and Representative Burley, that the language there, which is derived from our charter, states terms of art, and the whole question of what is the proper role for Metro versus what is the proper role for cities and counties within our boundary is one of continuous discussion and evolution. And at this point, and there's another bill that just came through recently passed the Senate and the House, Senate Bill 722, which is a bill we wrote with the city of Hillsborough to try to resolve some differences between ourselves and Hillsborough over what was our proper role in reviewing and compliance with local governments with our plans. And we settled on a term of substantial compliance, which people agreed with as the right level for Metro to be kind of up there at 10,000 feet, if not 30,000 feet, with the local governments really being the ones to decide the per tax lot zoning questions and really trying to achieve some regional goals with individual local decisions. And I've been involved in Metro and the bill that first created Metro over 30 years ago, and that's always been part of the conversation. And in the last 4 years, frankly, we've come a long way towards resolving some of those tensions. This bill, Senate Bill 1011, is one more step in taking that resolution where we've come to an agreement basically for power sharing with the counties over some of these really contentious issues, and we're still moving in that direction.
Given the way this bill is written right now, you see no reason why the department would not include other agencies in the rulemaking process on how to set up these rural reserves.
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Burley, for the record, Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and we are strongly supporting this bill, as you saw from our written testimony. Absolutely. We just finished a 2-year work group project to put in some streamlining into urban growth boundary amendment process and reached out to many state agencies that had an interest and included them in our work group, and that would be the way we would do this rulemaking.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. And with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1011A and close the House Energy and Environment Committee.